making a few minor changes here. So anyway, my apologies for those who are listening to the recorded version of the show, because we apparently lost a big chunk of it. The machine stopped. Linda, you regularly do this two-hour show on Wednesday. Do you cover any issues about local political injustice?
Yeah, I try to make a point of kind of having a woman's voice or even a mother's voice and getting the information out about what's going on that can change things, or what people can get together, kind of a grassroots bias. And, you know, how much the show is that varies from week to week, but this happens to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so there's some things women have put together happening right now. The rest of the month, this coming Wednesday, there's an art and poetry show at Walnut Avenue Women's Center. And I like to talk about that kind of stuff and how we don't have to dredge around the attitudes that our ancestors needed. That we can become nonviolent and still be effective. We don't have to be sexist to enjoy our sexuality. Things like that.
Well, I know that, have you been listening to our show regarding...
I got to listen for about 25 minutes. It was hard listening to the part about Richard Quigley.
Jerry Henry.
Recording. It's my radio problem.
No, it wasn't. I think we have a tape that's wavering around. My apologies, by the way, to listeners who had to play with their dial to deal with that Jerry Henry Friends interview. But was any of it audible? I hope some of it
was. Yeah, I was able to make it out. I mean, I kind of got incensed when he was talking about how this person who had him arrested parked a car beside his vehicle so she could. Little petty shit like that that people do every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting when they have the power of the law enforcement authorities and the whole judicial system behind them. That's when it really gets frightening.
Yeah.
I know that you yourself have been kind of dealing with the courts and on behalf of yourself and other people because you've been poor and homeless for the last two decades. Do you have any particular... And also, you're, of course, the chairperson of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which meets every 2 weeks and, I guess, has subcommittee meetings every week.
Yeah, subcommittees.
Anything you want to comment on?
The courts?
Well, yeah, let's talk about the courts first, and their experience and how they treat poor people in Santa Cruz.
Well, I just don't think poor people can survive the courts. You have to be very clever and very patient, you know. The judges across the board here, maybe everywhere for all I know, have a bias against people with a very limited income. And on top of that, the systemic things have the same prejudice built in. You know, my daughter has to come down here to take care of a ticket where she said she was speeding. She's going 3 miles over the speed limit coming in off of Highway 17 with the traffic. She can't afford to do that. I've seen people on the court watch doing that. You know, a lady came all the way from Oregon and had to confront Mulligan. I mean, he confronted her, really.
Mulligan, of course, is the referee of courtroom.
Yeah.
I think it's Tim, the guy in the basement who hears most of the traffic tickets. Unless you're smart enough, be advised out there, everybody. We disqualify Mulligan and put it into another judge's court. It's almost always
good. And if you're not smart enough, you'll get screwed and you'll get smart enough. I've seen it happen to a lot of people besides myself. The guys, I guess they like him because he pushes a lot of people through and it makes money for the state, but he's unconscionable. That's a word. And I feel the judges kind of gloat in their naivete or their bias or their ignorance about most of the people they pass sentence on. So go there with caution, go there with friends or allies, or even just a stranger, but somebody that's there on your behalf if necessary.
Always good advice when you visit a professional, whether it's someone who, even somebody you're paying, like your attorney or your doctor. These are people who, while they're supposed to be your advisor, turn out to, you know, they reverse the situation, they become the authority, and they tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And if you want to get more information, you often find yourself kind of intimidated and dressed down, and don't ask the questions, don't make the use of this of these people's experience, which you're really paying for.
Yeah, especially if you get a PD. If you're lucky enough to meet them before your case is called, you don't get much of a response when you do ask, in general. I used to feel that the people in jail had a better crack at getting a public defender's attention before the courtroom moment than people out of jail, because I just could never get through, and when I would finally make an appointment, they couldn't find any files. That was a recurring experience, but I don't see the guys in jail doing any better either.
You know, I know there are a lot of, well, a number of homeless people in jail. I've talked to Robert Steffen, the fellow who was he received 90 days in jail after three arrests for, quote, trespass on the porch of the Homeless Services Center. That's the Homeless Community Resource Center at Highway 1 and Highway 9 on Coral Street, because they would not let him come into the satellite shelter program, which is a very completely inadequate, and less than 30 spaces for 500 to 1,500 homeless people that's been in operation all summer and goes to the floors of churches on a rotating basis every night for those tiny number of people who are lucky enough to get in. And instead, the authorities of this homeless services center kept calling the police on him, and he was jailed, and he decided, of course, to use jail as a kind of shelter because he didn't want to have to keep going to jail, keep getting arrested and handcuffed every time, or face tickets under the sleeping ban, or face beatings from troll busters. He was concerned about that. And for those who are interested in his story, of course, they can talk to him. He's often on Pacific Avenue. He was there night before last in front of Bunny's Shoes. He's the fellow with the red beard, and he has his stuff with him they wouldn't let him have a shopping cart. The police stole his shopping cart and threatened him with arrest. Instead, they let him have, you know, he's gotten a donated television roller. And he says it's about to fall apart, and he was looking for people to donate. But I know he said in jail he saw lots of homeless people, or numbers of them, and I'm wondering, what the Homeless Issues Task Force, you were chosen chair of that body. I mean, my feeling about the Homeless Issues Task Force initially was, what a crock of shit, complete waste of time, but then...
It's an advisory body. You're taking information and sending it to other places. That's kind of the sum outcome you're going to get, but sometimes between the lines things can happen.
Well, initially I thought, you know, this is a way of kind of bleeding off activist energy and trying to deceive the community that something real was happening and throwing a little cookie to Christopher Crone after having slapped him across the chops along with Keith Sugar when Catherine Byers unilaterally decided there'd be no changes in the sleeping ban of any substance in terms of any real places for homeless people to sleep. I guess she decided that in the early February, and it was voted in March and went into law in April, which we now call it the Byers sleeping ban because she put her name on it. I mean, there's no other way to look at it.
I don't think you should overlook Tim Fitzmaurice's contribution to it, even though it was one sentence.
Well, I regard him as kind of Tiny Tim. That's what I'm going to call him. Old Tiny Tim Fitzmaurice tends to kind of trail along with his little red wagon behind sleeping band buyers, and whatever she says goes.
Well, I don't want to lambaste him personally, but I was very disturbed that while they were finally loosening up the camping ban in some minimal ways, he came in with the idea that if you're a vehicular dweller, you shouldn't be able to park more than 3 days anywhere in town.
Yeah, this kind of, he was posing as the champion of the bigoted residents who have reached some conclusions that it's dangerous to have homeless people sleeping in vehicles in the neighborhood because, according to Peter Eberle, they might abuse or kidnap children. This was something Eberle said out of season back in January, and I have never let him forget it, nor have I let the audience forget it, though I've got to say, it's possible Eberle may have learned, although he is still the head of the Downtown Association, and he did vote against the repeal of the camping ban, which I would like to commend your Homeless Issues Task Force, although it took 2 months to do it, and I should think it should have taken 2 weeks.
Well, it's taking more than 2 months just to get everyone seated on the
body. You didn't need everybody seated in order to vote
for
this repeal.
I know, I didn't mean that as an argument. I'm just putting the context.
Sure. You voted the repeal before everyone was seated, and, you know, I guess the next question I have, and my producer was going to look into this, but they've been delaying putting it on the city council agenda as a, not as an action item, of course, and that entire council is too gutless to even discuss the camping ordinance, but, I mean, we're talking, again, for the people who are listening,
it's
a lot of us...
It's possible that Chris Crone is an exception to that in this instance.
I don't think so, but I would love to be proved wrong. I know that this is not the sleeping ban we're talking about. This is, actually, the sleeping ban is included, but
the whole camping ordinance.
Yeah, your Homeless Issues Task Force took the Community Action Board's position, which is an agency that... how would you describe the Community Action Board?
Well, I guess the board or their position on the camping ordinance?
What they do, who they are.
they're a conduit for federal funds and sometimes some state money to get it into the low-income parts of the community that the federal government knows are not getting their share of.
It'll be a city agency
taxes.
Or a state agency?
Kind of a government-supervised nonprofit, independent nonprofit that they...
They've run things like the Shelter Project, and they've been...
Yeah, we're lucky here to have an independent community action board where people like Paul Brindell can be creative on the job. It's not like that in Monterey County. It's like a quasi-governmental arm down there.
But in any case, they seem to be, you know, the city council kind of refers to them as an authoritative source often, and they are a group that city council points to as a, you know, indications of its great humanitarianism and the wonderful resources available for homeless people in this community. And this board, under Paul Brindell, with Paul Brindell as, I guess, an executive staffer or something?
He is the director of the Shelter Project, one of maybe five, I don't know how many right now. Yeah, I was on the board during the time that they pushed the city to acknowledge that there was a shelter emergency the first time they did that, and when they started having this position you're talking about right now.
The first shelter emergency was declared by the city council in 1990, as I remember, though of course they had one in 1989 after the earthquake, and they've had one for the last two decades. But
I think the one in 89 didn't really affect the people who are already homeless in a very real way.
Oh, I think it did. I think they suffered even more discrimination.
Oh, yeah.
Because
okay.
Because resources were even scarcer, and so they stood out, and so they suffered this very special pre-quake homeless discrimination where...
Right. If you live in a shopping cart, sorry, you're not welcome at FEMA.
And if you were homeless because of the earthquake, you got, you know, the royal treatment, but if you weren't, you got arrested. I mean, I remember I was with Linda Edwards and Helen Langley in front of the Civic Center Civic Auditorium next to the City Hall, which was a temporary homeless shelter in 1989.
Yeah.
And 4 days afterward, the head of the shelter told me this place is full, so I'm letting people sleep outside. And Jim Howes, thank you very much, about whom we'll have more to say on this show, moved forward to arrest homeless people that would not leave in front of the shelter, claiming that they were violating the camping ban. Thank you very much.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not terribly impressed.
I agree with you. I'm just throwing myself at it.
Sure, but we were talking about CAB and the fact that CAB, the Community Action Board, had years ago gotten the City Council to declare shelter emergencies in 1990, 1995, and most recently in the mission statement of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And CAB has also on its own called for the abolition of the entire camping ordinance, given the fact that there is this shelter emergency. And I guess the Your Homeless Issues Task Force took that same position about a month ago and is now supposed to be bringing it to City Council, but...
We have brought it to City Council, and hopefully it'll be on the next agenda. We won't know. I won't know till Monday when it comes
out. The next agenda is Tuesday. You should know by now.
The next meeting. I should know, but I didn't get down there Friday. I'm saying is we got it to the mayor in time for her to consider for the upcoming meeting. We don't know the outcome yet.
Didn't you speak to Catherine Byers last week in some sort of meeting that you had with
her? Yes. Yeah, I went in with Becky Johnson. And we brought up a lot of issues, some of which the mayor responded to, some of which she made it clear she already had her mind made up.
Any update? Did she mention whether the camping ordinance was going to go on the city council agenda? Surely she would have
known. No, I talked to her front, the gals in front, not her, about that.
But she didn't mention that she was putting it on the agenda.
You know, she mentioned something reassuringly that I didn't know much about at the time I went in, but I've learned a little since. Maybe you've touched on it earlier in your show, I don't know. But the thing about the transportation department acquiescing to neighbors who want their streets to be posted as tow-away zones,
mm-hmm.
so that campers can't sleep there, so they don't have to deal with them.
Right.
And the mayor did make reference to that. Becky was informed about it, so, you know, I didn't get it all, but one of the things Catherine pointed out, nearby, is that people can make a citizen's arrest if they see conduct or behavior that's not appropriate. So, to me, this the idea of using the bureaucracy to create superfluous tow-away zones.
Well,
that's
actually,
something for business, loading and unloading.
There's some confusion here, Linda. I don't know if anyone can make an arrest under an infraction. I don't know if that's the case. And camping ban and whether they're sleeping ban, blanket ban, or camping ban tickets. Those are the three different flavors of camping ordinance tickets. Mm-hmm. Are all infractions generally. But what you can do is you can call a police officer who can then tell the person who's in a vehicle in front of your house, and this is for all you residents out there who hopefully have had reasonable dialogue with people who are parked in your neighborhood, and maybe they're being abusive in some way, or they're refusing to reasonably let you have your parking space or move around. I think people should move around, mm-hmm. and, you know, show some respect for the residents. I certainly favor that.
Mm-hmm.
You can
immediately
finish this.
Don't
just
toilets on the lawn. That would make a lot of difference.
You can call the police, and they can come, and they can instruct the person that, you know, during the hours of 11 to 8:30 in the morning, it's illegal for them to be there. And that's just the reality. Now, I have an interesting letter that I want to read to you that David Silva presented this to me.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the same thing I was trying to describe. Let me finish one thought about what Catherine was saying in that meeting, and then let you know.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
I hope I don't lose my thought. It concerned me. She said that... It got away, sorry.
Well, if it comes back, feel free to to just interject it at any point.
Mm-hmm.
David Silva, who is the man, of course, among many, but certainly one of the principal figures behind both the sleeping ban repeal initiative of 2 years ago, which got more than 3,000 citizen resident signatures, but didn't get on the ballot because of various other reasons. And also he worked with Kennedy and numerous other people until essentially being double-crossed by them in trying to get some kind of a compromise before the last council left. And he worked for many hours with the Catherine Byers little merry-go-round task force to examine the camping ordinance before it crapped out, with Catherine Byers essentially rigging the game and saying, throwing the table over and saying, nope, there are going to be no changes. Silva has been active in all kinds of things. Right now he's working, of course, on the hate-free zone initiative, not a hate crime initiative, but a hate-free zone initiative,
mm-hmm.
and getting signatures for that. But he was been concerned about your homeless issues task force and bringing matters to it. And one thing that Sherry Connable had brought up at the last meeting was that she had heard from Byers again, apparently, who's been telling people this. There's been some concern from neighbors out on, what is it, Alma Street?
Alma, it's over by the torso leading to the beach there. On the west side, but it's probably going to get worse since they're ripping up Mission Street.
So on Almar Street had been concerned about people camping out there, that is to say sleeping in their vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and was requesting that the entire area be posted no parking at night. Ken Cole, the head of the Homeless Services Center, also on your Homeless Issues Task Force, reassured Sherry Connable that would take, you know, a long time to do,
mm-hmm.
but in fact we've learned it may not take a long time at all. That the Transportation Commission was approached on October 13th about this issue, and the Homeless Issues Task Force, the City Transportation Commission,
right.
And apparently they didn't even notify you, did they?
No, we were not notified. I only just found out because of David's work yesterday.
Well, Silva, as you may remember, he told me he was very upset because it turns out, mm-hmm. that Officer Howes, yes, the same arrest those sleepers outside the Civic Auditorium, Jim Howes, mm-hmm. who has also recently acquired notoriety because he's told Bob LaMonica of the Rent Stabilization Initiative, mm-hmm. not to set up a table at the farmer's market or he'll have him arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he changed that position after a week, but it was just a flagrant example of his own initiative discarding the Constitution, and he went to the city attorney to get assistance in discarding the Constitution. He apparently got it, but Belcher, police chief, backed down from that particular tar baby. He didn't want to get involved with that one. But here's Howes again, and what David Silva told us was what? Do you want to articulate that, or should I do it?
You have the paper, right?
Well, I have the paper, which I can read, but first I'm going to say what Silva told me. What Silva told me was that he had contacted the resident Richard, let me get his name correctly, Richard Bosser, whose phone number I have. I'm actually going to call him and talk to him myself. And Bosser said he had been told by Howes, as had other residents of the neighborhood, that the police department had no power to issue camping tickets. That in essence, there was no camping ban at the moment. And that the only thing they could do was lobby the city council to get the law changed or set up no parking zones. This is what we call arrogantly false information houses either a cretin who doesn't know what he's talking about, and should, he's been around for 10 years, it's impossible to believe he hasn't read the camping ordinance, and if he hasn't, he can talk to his pal, Sergeant Butchie Baker, or Sergeant Steve Clark, who are supposedly experts on this issue. It is a serious political issue which was a major concern at the last winter season. And of course, it went nowhere, thank you, Catherine Byers, but it was still a major concern. House has been telling people that he cannot issue tickets at night, even if they request he come down, which is, of course, false information.
Certainly not what people in the cars are experiencing.
Right, and people are getting tickets anyway. But he's telling them, he's rousing up the neighbors in this area to do, you know, to seek this complete criminalization of parking at night, because it seems to be it's on his agenda, or it's on his superior's agenda. I mean, maybe he's some sort of stalking horse for some, you know, other official, like.
I can't help wondering if that's the inside story, is that he's just the loudest mouth, and they've been given some direction to be provocative in this way.
Well, let me read you the letter that I've got here. This is a letter from Bossner. Bosser, Richard Bosser, to the Santa Cruz City Council and others at the care of the Traffic Engineer's Office, October 5th, recampers and homeowners. Hello. Here are a citizen's complaints, written instead of spoken. I have researched our local process in the city of Santa Cruz regarding people camped in vehicles near my home, which I have owned since 1990. The single best service-oriented individual has been Officer Howes with the police department. I learned lots from him about the, quote, politics of this camping, quote, issue. As I understand it, the police are restrained by the municipal code and can't make campers move along even when residents complain. I call this undemocratic. I say the democratic approach would be campers are left alone if no one complains, but must move along if neighbors do complain. Short of muni code changes, I have been told the most likely deterrent is no parking overnight tow-away signs. This prompted a petition along with my neighbors. The mayor received it, and so did traffic engineering. The mayor called me back after 3 months to tell me to call traffic. The traffic office never called me back at all. Such bureaucratic indifference is very discouraging. I suggest half seriously that those who support campers in residential areas give me their address. I'll be happy to refer campers to their neighborhoods. And written on this is, that's from Richard Bosser, forward to Public Works for preparation of response with the mayor's signature. I haven't seen what that response is, and I don't know. It was received. It was received on October 6th, and the meeting of the Transportation Commission was. And actually, they do have a response. I can give you that. But did you want to point that out? Something else.
This man who was in such a hurry to refer what he considers excess traffic to other people's addresses. He doesn't have the guts to put any real address of his own on his correspondence.
He does give his phone number, which I'm not reading over the air
because
I want to talk to him. Oh, it's a message number.
Look at it carefully. There's not much information there.
Right, there's an email address and a message number. Anyway, here's the response to the Department of Public Works. The council received a letter from Richard Bosser dated October 5th, 1999, regarding campers and homeowners. Mr. Bosser and his neighbors have requested that the city install no parking tow-away zones during the night hours. The objective is to move campers parking on their street. Staff is taking this request to the City Transportation Commission on October 13th, 1999. That was, of course, 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bosser and his neighbors have been notified of the meeting. Of course, were you notified of this meeting?
No.
Nor were any advocates for the homeless.
Nor the city's own advising body.
Nor did Catherine Byers notify me of this meeting. Thank you, Catherine. Because apparently she does not just call back Bosser, she doesn't call back homeless advocates. This is the wonderful mayor we call the sheepish wolf, the wolf in sheep's clothing that pretends to be the dear little old lady on whom we can all rely and who's the sweetest thing this side of, you know, C's chocolates. Thank you very much. Staff recommends supporting the request of the neighborhood. Get that. Staff recommends supporting the request of the neighborhood, barring all parking at night. Unless the action is appealed to the council, if the City Transportation Commission approves the recommendation, the parking restrictions will be installed without further hearing. You better get down there and appeal that right away, Linda.
Yeah.
Now, what my point,
I think we should all appeal it. Everybody who knows about it.
I have a thought on this, which is that it is technically true that a person issued a camping citation for sleeping in a vehicle because of the change in the ordinance in March cannot be given a misdemeanor for the second ticket. That is true. However, I have never heard in my entire time here of an individual parked in a vehicle who didn't move once they got a camping ticket. And the reason for that is...
Or were asked to move?
I don't know about that. But I know that anyone I've ever heard of who got a camping ticket didn't get a second one versus being in their vehicle, because their vehicle, I think they become concerned about, is at risk.
Yes.
And therefore, this is horse shit. I mean, in very simple terms, very simple. This is nay-nay poo-poo. What this is, it is technically true that the officer cannot tell them to move on. Actually, he can.
He can
say move on. If you don't move on, I'll be back here and I'll give you another ticket. Now, Rotkin made much of the fact, council member Rotkin, that people can just, start getting hundreds of tickets and nothing happens for a month. Theoretically, that is true. But as I said, I have never heard of a single instance of it happening. And believe me, I am on the lookout for these tickets. Because I follow them, I track them in court. I'm concerned about the fact that the courts have continued to, until very recently, not even follow the city law. They've been charging $162 instead of $54 fines. So I think that Officer Howes is either ignorant and misleading people with his ignorance, or intentionally and willfully misleading people. And whatever the case...
Or maybe lazy. Maybe they just don't want to deal with the public relations part of their job, letting people from out of town know what...
Well, certainly Mayor Byers is lazy. She hasn't picked up the phone to call you, the head of her homeless issues task force, to say, hey, this is going to affect every homeless person sleeping on that street. You might want to go and talk about it. And also, this is just the place you would go to have a dialogue with the neighbors. There's all this talk about, how everybody's polarized and in their own little camps and not talking. Well, this is where you would talk to people.
I really wish I had known about that Transportation Commission meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
It's a ripoff. I do remember what I was going to say.
Go ahead.
Catherine was mentioning, I brought up something. It wasn't vehicular, but camping and sleeping bags situation. And she acknowledged that if the police already know the guys on the street, the warning thing, if they know the person knows about the camping ban law, that's a warning. I'm not quoting her now, but that's the meaning of what she said.
I know. She's taking that directly from the police chief. I read that in his... She gave you a handout, which Don Lane distributed, your staff person, your non-homeless staff person distributed that at the last... the last Homeless Issues Task Force meeting. What he did not distribute, of course, according to David Silva and to Laura Tucker, your homeless staff person, was a report he got from Harvey West, which slams your Homeless Issues Task Force. It came out like a month ago, but for some reason, poor Don failed to put that into the packet. Must have been another one of his oversights, like failing to reserve the room, so you're now packed into a closet at City Hall.
Well, I like the smaller table, but we need a bigger room so everyone can get around it. I saw Don has that, and I'd very much like to get a copy myself. I want to encourage, by the way, that neighborhood organizations get organized, and if these quality of life issues are what they worry about, then we really need a broader dialogue in every neighborhood. I think Harvey West neighborhood, if those neighbors are feeling put upon, it's because all the homeless services that are publicly accessible are right there at the entryway to their neighborhood. And we need to be a little more fair and involve the whole city and all the other neighborhoods, not put up tow-away signs just for nighttime deliberately to discriminate against people who are vehicular dwellers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, actually...
We have public parks with public bathrooms in almost every neighborhood of town, and they're curfewed. You can't even go there for a stroll, let alone to go.
Which you can thank Jim Lang, who's the hereditary, endless head of Parks and Rec, one of those staff members that you can throw out a city council. The city councils come and go, but these characters like Dick Wilson and Jim Lang and John Barisoni, they are immortal. They stay forever. They seem to run things and never, never leave.
Maybe we should invite Jerry Brown down.
Yeah,
it is.
Jerry, I love the police Brown, our transformed one-time green, now a kind of a black bile kind of city. He's a Oakland.
I don't know his politics well enough, but I know he got rid of the city manager in one effort.
That's true. He did.
And it's so doable.
Well, the city council could get rid of the current city manager, and it wouldn't only take 4 votes. So the trouble is they don't have the guts to do it, or perhaps they don't have the votes because Catherine Byers and her little pal Fitzmaurice, are just saying yes to city manager Wilson, City Attorney Barisone, you know, Parks and Rec Czar Jim Lang, and apparently Jim Howes and his pal Steve Belcher, you know, the police chief.
We have to get these police straightened out.
Yeah. Anything you want to add? I'm going to try to free up the phone line.
I think so. I'm happy to hang up.
When is your next Homeless Issues Task Force meeting?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it's a week from Monday at 5:30, and I suppose it's in the library, although your staff person doesn't seem to know where it is.
I understand the next meeting will be back in the ABC room.
That's the ABC room of the Civic Auditorium across from City Hall. It'll be a week from Monday, so it should be, what, November 2nd or something like that?
That sounds right.
Let's see. I've got a calendar here. November 1st, actually. That's on Monday at 5:30 in the ABC room of Civic Auditorium. There are a number of committee meetings this week. I know that I think there's one at 4:30 at the Homeless Services Center for Services. I think there's a legal meeting on Wednesday for folks who are interested of the legal committee. That's at 7 o'clock at Loudon Nelson.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm missing my little notebook. I think I may have left it.
I didn't bring my notes.
But
I'm
going to try to wing it.
But one of the committees, the subcommittee, is about certain process and outreach things, and I would like to see more and new volunteers that have a little energy to help with one of the goals of this process and outreach committee, which is to have a gathering that's specifically for, dedicated for homeless people, and hopefully get some more information about the spreading hate crimes.
Yeah,
they're working that out.
That group is supposed to be meeting to talk about setting up public hearings on troll busting and who's getting hit. And you can either come in privately and talk about it, you can talk about it publicly, you can talk about it in groups.
We want to create confidential private mechanisms, too. It's important. So, I should hang up.
Well, I've been talking to Linda LeMaster, who is, you have your show, I guess, Linda, at 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I'm opening your show, tune in.
And you
enjoy
your
free radio while it's
And if you want to reach the Homeless Issues Task Force, do you have a number for us?
I don't, but you can use my number, and I will look it up and tape it to the phone. Own it, 423-HOME, or 423-4663.
423-HOME, if you want to leave a message for Linda LeMaster's Homeless Issues Task Force, I should say the city's Homeless Issues Task Force, of which Linda is the head, as well as, of course, an activist with HUF and with Housing Now, right?
Yes.
Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
And other things like welfare and low-income support networks.
Yeah, dig it.
Working with homeless families.
Well, thank you, Linda.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
The apple's ripe upon the bough, the orange on the tree.
The hands were black that picked the fruit for you, but not for me.
Diamonds shining in the rock, gleaming white and blue.
10 hours a day in the diamond mines for me, but not for you.
A sea of grass and a mountain ranges beckoning the breeze.
A place to walk with head held high for you, but not for me.
The burning sun of Africa, the sky that's always blue.
Apartheid and the past laws for me, but not for you.
A big land, a rich land, stretched from sea to sea.
And all the riches of the earth for you, but not for me.
A big land, a gracious land, a land where old meets new.
The bullets fired at Sharpeville were for me, but not for you.
You've planted seeds of fear and hate in all who would be free. At harvest time, the fruit will be for you and not for me.
And that was Black and White, again from the Peggy Seeger album. And a good song it was. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears, Broadside Civil Rights for the Poor.
And on the line, we have with us that man who's not just talking on the radio about civil rights, but is trying to expand civil rights for tenants with his rent stabilization and advisory initiative. Rather tepid initiative from my view, but certainly better than nothing. We're talking to Bob LaMonica. Hi, Bob.
Robert, how you doing?
I'm good.
All hail the progressive slate.
Tell me more, Bob.
Well, it's the sign of the times. Millennium politics. We'll consider taking action. We'll look into it, etc. That's what I think about the situation locally. I also think the word progressive has been so thoroughly abused and debased by those that call themselves progressive in this town that I wouldn't use that term in context of myself personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you're concerned about the borders controversy.
If you're looking for self-serving cronyism, then look to the progressives in Santa Cruz, because they will come out and quickly. How quickly they mobilized over this borders issue. Now, to me, borders. If you look at what happened to the Boston market, they moved into town and they left. They didn't make it, right? But borders is extremely, in my opinion, incorrect social policy. It is designed to protect one business, and I think Bookshop Santa Cruz would flourish with borders here. I think borders.
You don't mean borders. You mean the law, or the city council rushed to pass the law.
Well, they haven't passed it yet, but I think it's if what looks the way that it looks is probably a foregone conclusion. But if you read the ordinance, the proposed ground level uses, it's got to add to a new type of business, contribute to the appropriate balance. You know, who decides these things? And then, by the way, when the city council and their endless task forces decide on who is righteous enough and upon what basis to move into Pacific Avenue, does that determine whether they're going to succeed or not? Or are they guaranteed endless subsidies?
Well, doesn't this
I think this opens up a rather interesting
Bob,
dilemma.
Doesn't this affect national chains? It doesn't affect like local businesses that want to open up or state chains, but just national chains.
Well,
right?
the last article here that has any meaning, really, as far as I'm concerned, in the ordinance is contribute to an appropriate balance of traditional and non-traditional businesses in the central business district. These are interesting discretions.
Doesn't it refer to national
it
chains?
It refers to an appropriate balance of local, regional, and national-based businesses. Now, by the way, I'll put this in there. In 1999, the internet is upon us. Retailing is changing radically, and Santa Cruz is not an island. If Santa Cruz were an island, it would divorce itself from the internet. There would be no international business presence here at all, including, I would think, behind the scenes, so that nobody would use computers because they're built internationally, and the entire economy would collapse. I would suggest, if I were a property owner on Pacific Avenue in 1999, Santa Cruz being what it is in terms of what draws downtown, which are tourists and students, I think a bookshop that is mainstream, that's going to cover selections other than what Bookshop Santa Cruz has, I think makes sense. And I find, to me, the fact that this issue developed the kind of strength that it did and the way that it did, it didn't go up through the usual channels of scan. They just simply operated out in a unison agreement.
Well, let me make my comments on this so you can give me your thoughts. I have no love of bookshop owner Neil Coonerty, as you probably know, even though I've got to acknowledge that he has done a number of things, both pro and con, with respect to the homeless. Pro, he keeps a bathroom that's open. He allows people to read in his bookstore without much harassment, unless you're on his political blacklist, as, for instance, I've been for the last 5 years, since 1994, when he connected me somehow, though he wouldn't say so publicly, because it would be libelous, with the individuals who threw two rocks through his window. This was at a time when he was championing anti-homeless laws, sit on the sidewalk, go to jail, and so forth. You couldn't actually have a voter registration table in front of his store. That would be illegal, even though it's the public sidewalk. Thank you, Neil Coonerty. A number of, I feel, unwise laws that I publicly challenged him on, and he, of course, was a mayor, and he was on city council during a four-year period, and then he left the city council. And, of course, I also want to note that Coonerty has employed homeless people. He employed my street spirit vendor, John Moore, let him sleep in his doorway night after night. You might say, you know, that's sleeping in his doorway is not very good at working conditions for an employee. But, you know, there are people who will actually call the police and have you arrested for sleeping in their doorway. So I don't want to in any way diminish from what Neil Coonerty as a local business person does in terms of his positive steps. And they have been real. He has sat on the Crapper Commission, as I call it, the Commission for the Public Bathrooms. And they have put in four or five now porta-potties in different places throughout the town that are 24-hour. One of them burned down, I believe, but there are still four of them left, and they're working on real public bathrooms. And so, I mean, one has to acknowledge this and commend him for these actions. That said, I also want to say that I don't like Borders and Barnes and Noble, not because they aren't nice
bookstores. Well, then don't shop there.
Not because they aren't nice bookstores, and not because they are necessarily hostile to to individuals, though I suspect they would not be any friendlier to homeless people than Coonerty, and probably much less so. But I can't say that because I haven't gotten reports from Seaside and Palo Alto, which I'm going to try to investigate before the next show. And by the way, for those who are interested, this issue is coming up Tuesday at the next city council meeting. At 7 o'clock, there will be a vote on the Borders, they call it the box store ordinance, but it's actually the Borders ordinance. I mean, in
of course it is. It was done immediately after Borders was determined. Now, let me just make some brief comments. Bookshop Santa Cruz is a fine store. Okay, I bought a book there. I spent $30 there in August.
I haven't bought anything there in 5 years.
Fine store, wonderful establishment. But however, when we make the step of protectionism of a single business, which is what this is all about. If Bookshop Santa Cruz government-protected downtown exclusivity is so sacrosanct to the perceived correctness of what Santa Cruz is about, why not demand a 50% public stake in the joint? Okay? Mm-hmm. And I think that when governmental entities start deciding what types of businesses are going to go into specific locations, they have dramatically crossed over a line of credibility. And one other thing I want to throw in here, too, there's a hemp renaissance happening in downtown Santa Cruz, which I've yet to hear, and I could be wrong about this, but I've yet to hear any statement from the city council in this regard. What a wonderful thing this is, that Pan World Traders has recently opened up a shop called Natural Expressions on Locust across from the garage, and Santa Cruz Hemp, Avatar Hemp, is going to be opening up just north of where the Salvation Army is. And of course, EcoGoods has been a stalwart downtown for quite a while.
We should say that Bob, you've been involved in the annual hemp exhibition.
As our third Santa Cruz Industrial Hemp Expo is coming up, we moved it to Mother's Day weekend, May 12th and 13th of the year 2000. We're already selling booths. We're going to have a hemp parade down Pacific Avenue Saturday morning. And a major event at the Civic. We're going to offer booths for the first time on Church Street in a big tent. We had both years in a row there were more vendors that wanted in than we had space, so this was a year that an expansion on that level makes sense.
Right, you were at the Civic.
Right. Yeah, we're still going to be at the Civic, but it's going to be a major expansion with additional vendor space.
And plus you've been working, as I mentioned originally, on the rent stabilization initiative. Where is that at, Bob?
Rent control has every chance to make it to ballot. Now, I want to say one thing about where you say tepid, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I decided, I would have done a pedestrian mall push had it not been for the I think imperativeness of rent control during this weather window, which is where you hit the festivals at the beginning of the summer. You have the summer and you got a nice hunk of UC at the end. It's like an ideal weather window timeline for a populist ballot measure. The reason why I decided on an advisory measure were for several reasons. One of them is if the concept flies, it'll happen. The other one is if it would have been spelled out, it would have been torn apart bit by bit. And the final one is the state law has dramatically impacted rent control.
And those are all good reasons, Bob.
Okay. And if this thing passes at the ballot, make no question about it, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a bandwagon in the making. Now, where rent control is sitting at now, and I'm going to use this same number, it's extremely conservative, and the significant odds are that it's way beyond this, but I'm going to say there are 4,700 in-house right now. 4,700. What this thing needs to qualify for the ballot is 3,723.
But those are legal. You need
right.
to get a couple thousand overage.
You bet. Okay, there's going to be an overage. The question is how much of an overage. I think it's important that this thing strive to hit 6,000. And there's a good, almost 2 weeks left.
Mm-hmm.
And it is as strong now as it's ever been, including picking up new signature gatherers. This has been a very popular issue all along the way. Been a lot of fun to work with. And I have learned a lot about the Santa Cruz so-called progressives.
What have you learned?
In relationship to rent control. And I'm going to be very bold. I have learned that if it's not initiated and controlled by certain people, then it is distance. And if SCAN does endorse this, and I hope they do, they will have done it at a point when it would be pretty much a foregone conclusion.
Well, certainly the Homeless Issues Task Force endorsed it at the last meeting.
That's a wonderful thing that they did, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that rent control with the modification of state law is so modest now. What's happened January 1 is that rent control on a statewide basis, what communities that have rent control all fall under this.
The vacancy
decontrol. Vacancy decontrol is the biggest factor, which is to say that when you move out, the property owner can do whatever they want with
rent. It's holidays for the property owner.
And then it goes back onto rent stabilization. The other main factor is that single-family dwellings without attached units are exempt from rent control. All right, but the great majority of people are going to be impacted positively by rent control. I want to throw something else in here. This land trust stuff.
Did you go to that thing yesterday?
Not yesterday. I went to the tail end of the first one. Mm-hmm. It's a nice thing, but even if there were 100 units built in Santa Cruz, you're talking about 0.01% of the renters.
Bob, were you at the Tuesday affordable housing shindig at City Council? I kind of said my piece down there.
No, no.
You know, there's this question about where to build affordable housing. Of course, a lot of us have been concerned about the possible demolition of the Dolphin Lee as the sort of pet project of the Mercy Housing liberals, who don't really care what the locals think too much about it, but they want to just plow right ahead, and that looks like it's where it's heading in spite of.
Well, these are good things. I think affordable housing, land trusts, these are good things, but they are safety net. They are marginal. Santa Cruz has a population of 51,500, 53% renter residents. That's 27,295 renter residents, mm-hmm. approximately. And just to use the land trust example, which is touted as SCAN's major thrust into their effort to mitigate the impact of the hot real estate market here. 100 land trust units, as I said earlier, 1/100 of 1% of the renter residents. That's if 3 residents per unit live there. All right, and this is wonderful stuff, but the thing is that most people are going to be positively affected by rent control. Rent control should have happened 20 years ago. The time is ripe for it, and I think that the signals are that it's on a roll where it's going to happen.
Now, how can people reach you to help out?
Next to farmers markets are very important. You